This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of October 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 17th of October 2013, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. A few items of what's on. Annual art exhibition. Some of Winchester's most talented artists are exhibiting in the city for the next few weeks. Sculpture, drawings and paintings by members of Winchester Art Club will be on display at Winchester Discovery Centre until Sunday, November the 3rd. Roadshow brings battery of advice. A good advice roadshow is coming to Oliver's Battery later this month. Anne Forrest has organised You Are Not Alone, an event to share advice and information on careers, on carers and vulnerable people. So far, more than 20 charities and organisations have signed up to attend the roadshow at St Mark's Church in Oliver's Battery Road South. It takes place on Wednesday, October the 30th, and entry is free. And two events in the Cathedral. On Tuesday, 22nd of October, the lunchtime concert at 1 o'clock, the Winchester Youth Orchestra. There's a retiring collection. And then on Wednesday, October the 23rd, the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, the annual talk will be given by Kate Adie in the Cathedral at 7:30. Kate Adie, of course, is the renowned TV reporter who will be talking about her new book, Fighting on the Home Front, The Legacy of Women in World War One. And tickets for this event are £10 for Friends of the Cathedral, £15 for non-friends, and that doesn't sound very... people who are not friends. Sorry, I better rephrase that again. Non-friends, I'll just leave it as it is. And they can be obtained from the Cathedral box office or on 01962 857 275. That's the Cathedral box office, or ring 01962 857 275. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 18th of October, the sun rose at 25 to 8 this morning and will set at 10 past 6 this evening. And Wednesday of next week, that's the 23rd of October, the sun will rise at 7:45 in the morning and will set just before 6 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. And there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle this week are Bonfire Night in Jeopardy, Concern over Scale of Solar Farm Plans, and Sainsbury's Answers Pull Out Rumours. So they're not particularly grammatically well written, those headlines. But anyway, we'll move on to the story behind the first headline.
Bonfire Night in Jeopardy. The future of Winchester's premier fireworks event could be in jeopardy if a bigger leisure centre is built at River Park, its organisers have warned. John Leeson, chairman of Winchester Round Table, said they couldn't stage the event at North Walls Recreation Ground if space was limited by the new development. The council is debating whether to replace or repair the leisure centre, and its preferred option is a new complex on the tennis courts and part of a field, a plan which has been greeted with dismay by those who fear for the loss of a much-loved green space. Mr. Leeson said, The council has let us use the land for the last 15 years since we moved from Oram's Arbour. But looking at what they are proposing, I do not think we could hold the bonfire night there at all. And the question then is, where could we hold it? Our first thought was Bar End, but we can't hold it there because the council doesn't own the land and the smoke would be too near to the M3. We don't have contingency plans, so this would endanger the event. It would be a crying shame to lose it. He added that Roundtable hadn't been consulted and that members discovered the situation through the Chronicle reports. Mr. Leeson, also speaking as MD of Belgarum Estate Agents, added, I would think to get rid of that amount of open space and amenity land would be a grave error. Once that space is gone, it is gone forever, and that land is a legacy for future generations. The new centre would replace the tennis courts and take some 10 to 15 metres of the playing field, according to Council Leader Keith Wood, who said new tennis courts would be built on the site of the old building, although it was previously earmarked for a 300-space car park. A council spokesman said the impact on other users of the park would, of course, be an important consideration. There is no intention or proposal to end the Round Table's successful and popular fireworks display. Meanwhile, the Save the Wreck group said the loss of the space and fireworks would be a double blow. Spokesman James McConaughey said, the two are connected. The fireworks event is a place for the whole city to come together, and so is the wreck, which is the only thing Winchester has that you could call a park. Green, open, natural space. Sylvia Mould of Riverside Indoor Bowls Club said, if it took our car parking facilities, it would be a huge problem, especially for disabled members. People do not treat us just as a bowls club, but as a social club as well.
Concern over scale of solar farm plans. Dozens of people attended a public meeting to air concerns about a proposed solar farm on farmland near Alsford. Villagers of Bishop Sutton were worried about the impact of more than 2,000 solar arrays on 55 acres of land in a £12 million development. Most of the 50-strong audience last Wednesday agreed that solar farms should be on brownfield or industrial sites and not countryside close to the South Downs National Park. Parish Council Chairman Aileen Miller said there were concerns the applicants were exaggerating the benefits. Anti-wind farm campaigner Douglas Patterson said, it is still horrendously expensive and is unlikely to provide more than a tiny percentage of our requirements in the next decade. But Mark Candlish, a director of Solar Fields, agents for Spanish firm Beta Solar, said they were not overstated, not least because there were investors to keep happy. Mr. Candlish predicted solar would in 10 years provide a big chunk of UK energy needs. He said the site was chosen after the landowner approached them. It was close to a substation and not overlooked by housing. Resident Martin Henderson said villagers opposed the sheer size of the scheme, its visual impact and loss of good farmland. Jan Field, chairman of the Alsford Society, said the panels would be seen from the other side of the A31 on the Wayfarers Walk near Tichborne Down. The absence of the landowner at the meeting at Alsford Recreation Centre was noted. John Miller said it was shame he hadn't the courage to come along. Mr. Henderson said, it is a great pity the landlord who has enjoyed living in Alsford and Bishop Sutton can put forward a scheme from which he stands to make personal gain at the cost of the community at large. Toby Coles of Western Court Farm, who farms the land, called the Chronicle within minutes of the story appearing on the website to stress that it was factually incorrect to say that he was the landowner. He said the site was, in fact, owned by his brother, Bill Coles, who lives in Edinburgh. Toby Coles said, "I am not the driving force. I am not the landowner. I have no financial interest in it and will gain no financial benefit from it." Simon Smith of nearby Ropley told the meeting, "Solar is a great renewable energy, but it needs to be placed where there is sun. Why not put solar farms in the south of France?" But there was support for the plans. David Wright of Appledown Close, Alsford, said, "Some people find solar farms attractive. I would welcome it." Robin Atkins of Lindley Gardens, Alsford, said, "I am in favour of different uses in the countryside. I want energy from solar rather than fossil fuels." The planning application has been submitted, and the deadline for comments is October the 18th. After the meeting, Mr. Candlish said, "There was a really good turnout and a range of views expressed. Most were concerned about the project, but there were people in favour."
Sainsbury's answers pull-out rumours. Superstore denies going lukewarm on Waltham. Sainsbury's have denied that plans for a controversial new superstore in Bishops Waltham have stalled. Residents have been discussing the lack of progress at the Abbey Mill site, where work had been expected to start in the summer. It is also understood doctors from the Bishops Waltham surgery, who expect to be consulted over the £1 million surgery as part of the planning agreement, approached Civic Chiefs last month because they had heard nothing from Sainsbury's. It is unclear if that has changed, and the doctors had not responded to requests for comment at the time of going to press. There is speculation Sainsbury's might be having second thoughts and could be considering a revised proposal in line with their changing business model. Sainsbury's chief executive, Justin King, recently said that by the end of the year, his company would have more convenience stores than supermarkets. "What we are seeing is customers doing a smaller weekly shop. We see a very different shopping behaviour than we were seeing 5 years ago," he said. Winchester City Council's deputy leader, Rob Humby, wasn't aware of changes to Sainsbury's plan, but added, "They do not seem to be hurrying." Bishops Waltham Parish Council clerk Lindsay Edge said, "I contacted Sainsbury's planning agents because I'd heard rumours that maybe they wouldn't be coming, but I believe they're trying to meet the planning conditions and some of the ecological tests have been delayed." The plans were heavily delayed in October last year due to a public inquiry into the stopping up of Station Road, necessary as a result of a single objection from a local resident. But a government-appointed planning inspector gave the order the green light in January this year. Sainsbury's have now released a statement in a bid to quash rumours of a pull-out.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bartlett, Joseph Patrick Bartlett, on the 12th of October, aged 83. Cole, Telia Cole, on 9th of October, in hospital, aged 83. Collins, Rose Collins, in hospital on the 10th of October, aged 94. Coombs, Gerald Albert George, known as Jerry Coombs, on the 4th of October at Southampton General Hospital, aged 86. Deeds, Canon Arthur Colin Bouverie Deeds, formerly Master of St Cross Hospital, on the 15th of October, aged 86, at Brecknock Hospice in Andover. Elliot, Emily R. Elliot, on the 9th of October, aged 91. Everard, May Jean, known as Jetta Everard, on the 5th of October at Brendon Care Nursing Home, aged 92. Illett, Ken Illett, on the 8th of October, aged 78. Ivory, Doreen Florence Ivory, on the 12th of October, aged 84. James, Pauline James, aged 86, died on the 10th of October. Richardson, Richard, known as Dick Richardson, on the 10th of October, aged 77. Rothwell, Susan Ann Rothwell, née Harris, on the 12th of October, aged 63. Sherwood, Edwin Sherwood, on the 10th of October, aged 80. Wateridge, Margaret Rose Wateridge, née Arnold, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 8th of October, aged 76. And now we have Christian comment.
And this week it's written by Rosemary Baker, and she entitles it, We Have to Do More Than Just Give. As October draws to a close, most of the churches have had their harvest festivals, and the crops are safely gathered in for this year, in this country at least. We are so dependent on the weather as to whether we have a good harvest, but we scarcely give a thought to those who are even more dependent, who are affected by drought or floods, without modern technology to assist them. At our harvest services in King Somborne, we split our collection between Water Aid and the Winchester Night Shelter, and the produce was also given to the night shelter, mostly dry and tinned goods. I'm sure we were not alone in giving food to local need, many supporting food banks. As I write this, it has just been announced by a food bank in Wiltshire that the numbers using it have increased by a third over the figures for the same quarter last year. Now, this has nothing to do with the harvest, but everything to do with the economy and the casualties from the strategies for dealing with it. Of course, there have always been poor people, and the church has always given to them. But this is different. We have to do more than give. This coming week, October the 20th to the 27th, is the One World Week, an opportunity for people from diverse backgrounds to come together to learn about global justice, to spread that learning, and to take action for justice locally and globally. This year, the theme is More Than Enough? Query, inspired by a saying of Archbishop Oscar Romer, who was assassinated in 1982 for speaking up for the voiceless poor in South America. He said, Aspire not to have more, but to be more. The campaign asks us to ask ourselves, Have we had more than enough of consumer culture getting in the way of relationships with others in our communities and across the globe? Have we had more than enough of being defined by what we possess? Have we had more than enough of seeing our planet irrevocably consumed? Have we taken more than enough ourselves? These are all thought-provoking deep questions that are worthy of both reflection and study, not just by Christians, but by everyone. We can toss a coin or a can in on a packet into the collecting trolley at Sainsbury's. Please don't stop doing that. But should we be doing more? That is what One World Week is asking us.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do it by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, You can email to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Over half the letters this week concern the proposed development at River Park. So we'll start off with the first of these letters.
And it's from Mike Caldwell in Winchester, and it's been given the title Spending Too Long in the Sweet Shop. Sir, Councillor Keith Wood remains economical with the truth over the proposed new leisure centre in Talking Point, October the 10th. In the Continuum Sport and Leisure Limited report of May 2013, commissioned by the City Council, there are professional estimates for a new centre provided by E.C. Harris Built Asset Consultancy. The recommended option for a new build leisure centre is £25.9 million, excluding demolition of current centre, access roads, parking and services, planting and landscaping. So the cost could be £30 million. Councillor Wood states a figure of £14 to £17 million and that, quote, we have no professional cost estimate, unquote. In the same report, much weight is given to the importance of parking revenue in financing such a project. Councillor Wood indicates that tennis courts will be replaced on the site of the old facility. This will not happen, as this area is needed for car parking, and the courts and astro pitches will be sited beyond the new build leisure centre, on what is left of the cricket pitch. His claim that a mere 10 to 15 metres strip will be taken is misleading and impossible if the plans clearly detailed in the Continuum report are adhered to. A new centre on the land he would like to build on would decimate a large part of the green space forever. Many Winchester folk would like new leisure facilities, but in the right location and affordable. It is stated in this report that Winchester City Council, quote, does not have unallocated capital funds available to support any significant leisure centre development at the current time, unquote. But last week's paper headlined, New City Council Headquarters Back on the Agenda. Where is all this money coming from? Surely lessons have been learnt by us all as to the foolhardiness of overborrowing, of living beyond our means? Councillor Wood is spending too much time in the sweet shop without any pocket money. He should give the people of Winchester the truth, and nothing but the truth. Mike Caldwell, Nuns Road, Winchester.
Build another one down at Bar End. This letter from Anne Gildersleeve. Sir, read the letter from Anthony Burrows, October the 3rd. I can assure him that River Park Leisure Centre is a hive of activity. It is clear he has not been there for some years, as whenever I attend Zumba or yoga class and swim, it's very busy. As a regular swimmer, I hope any renovation work is done without a long closure, and I firmly believe that it should remain where it is. The centre is easily accessible by bus, bicycle or car from all the villages around Winchester. It would be best not extended to playing fields, which are in constant use. If a bigger centre is needed for young athletes and budding Olympians, perhaps another one could be built at Bar End. And Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross.
Isabella Block writes on Green Landscape is Part of Heritage. Sir, I'm shocked to hear the City Council plans to build on our cricket field. This green landscape, close to our city centre, bordered by beautiful trees, is a much-loved area for walking, relaxing, and just feeling at peace. This is just as important to many of us, individuals or families, as using leisure centre facilities, and I think you would find that many of its users would also agree. No, no, no to its destruction, and to spending £25 million of our money on doing so. I'd ask that the present centre is refurbished and any extra facilities deemed necessary built where Winchester's precious wreck can remain part of our heritage to succeeding generations. Let us all remember the funds the council administers belong to the citizens, who love this ancient and beautiful city and its wonderful parks and open spaces. Isabella Block, Hyde Park Church Path, Hyde, Winchester.
Phil Yates says, councillors should take a fresh look. Sir, I am no sportsman, but common sense tells me that the playing fields in the North Walls Park should remain, not only for the purpose they are there for, but because this is where the annual fireworks display is held and the fairs and circuses take place. Have councillors thought about these facilities? I doubt it. As our MP Steve Brine said at the recent meeting, they should look at this afresh. Either negotiate with Tesco to build on the Bar End site or refurbish the existing leisure centre rather than demolishing it for yet another car park. My wife and I often walk the playing fields area and watch the sports taking place. Please do not take these facilities away from people like ourselves. I urge the action group to keep fighting, but don't hold your breath too long, as the powers that be will possibly win in the end. As Tony Munday and Vera Bruti wrote in last week's issue Re Barton Farm, residents' views are noted, but then ignored. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Council's River Park plan is unworkable, says Guinevere Harvey. Sir, it seems fairly obvious that no feasibility study has been done on the proposed new site for the River Park Leisure Centre. If it had, it would have been apparent for various reasons that it would be unworkable. Lawrence Talks, who works for a local environmental agency, made this clear at the meeting at the Guild Hall. Unfortunately, his very clear, cogent reasons went unreported. The field the council would like to develop is next to a wildlife reserve and is on very fragile marshland, subject to flooding. Many will recall that St Bede's School was severely damaged by flooding a dozen years ago, necessitating it being moved lock, stock and barrel while repairs were carried out, a hugely expensive and disruptive exercise. With global warming now universally recognised, flooding may well become more frequent and more severe. The idea of a car park for a further 300 cars is nothing short of madness. North Walls is dangerous enough as it is, and yet more cars entering and exiting Gordon Road would almost certainly lead to gridlock. The idea of a road linking Gordon Road and Park Road, where there is now a skateboard rink, a footpath and a children's playground, not to mention its proximity to the primary school, seems to indicate a total lack of knowledge of the area. Children's safety would be very much at risk and the noise level increased. Green space is precious in a city. A place to run free. A play cricket in summer and football in winter, as well as other activities, is not only beneficial for physical fitness, but for mental well-being. A treadmill is no comparison. I strongly urge the council to please think again. Guinevere Harvey, Danes Road, Winchester.
Doug Spike says, let's keep leisure centre in the city. Sir, Councillor Keith Wood explained the leisure centre development options in the Chronicle of October the 10th, which is important because the campaign to, quote, save the wreck, unquote, suggests the entire cricket field is at risk. This seems not to be the case, as the expansion option would result in the loss of only a very small strip of field. I'd be disappointed if a riverside solution can't be found, and the existing centre is replaced with one out of town. Let's keep it in town, but make it fit in with the well-used surrounding fields. It doesn't need to be massive. With a better design, we could get more into the space we have. Loads of people walk in, and we can all live without a 50-metre pool. Dark Spikes, Athelstan Road, Winchester.
The title of this letter from R. Abel is Taking the Politics Out of Democracy. Sir, Tesco, as reported in the Chronicle, were unaware of an approach from the council with regard to possibly using land at Bar End for a new leisure centre. This makes me wonder about a councillor's claim at the members' only meeting that plans for Barton Farm are too far down the planning route to be considered as a possible location for a new leisure centre. Peter Simmons College is reportedly in negotiation with Carla Holmes regarding relocating some services to Barton Farm. Maybe someone should double-check with Carla. Of course, Barton Farm should be considered, as it can be easily linked by cycle routes and paths to most of Winchester. It will have a park and ride, it's accessible off the M3 and A34, and it's not on playing fields or a floodplain. The council should also consider selling the River Park site to a hotel, with a smaller gym and pool attached. This would provide revenue, negate the need to expand the car park or build on the open space. The hotel would attract valuable additional tourists to the city and reduce traffic. This is only one idea and lacks detail. I'm sure there are lots of other locations and inspirational ideas out there, so let's have a real public consultation. Finally, councillors, it's your job to challenge the options put to you by civil servants and do the best for Winchester. Or you may find your seats contested by locals who have a vision and care about what happens to Winchester. After all, wouldn't it be interesting to take politics out of democracy? R. Abel, Dean Lane, Winchester.
John Leeson, who is chairman of Winchester Roundtable, writes, reasons behind ticketing charge. Sir, may I reply to Mr. Lee's request to not blame health and safety for introducing a ticketing charge for the annual Winchester Roundtable bonfire and fireworks display, letters October the 10th. We are committed to ensuring the safety of around 25,000 people, and with increasing numbers it is necessary to review procedures. We have brought in extra security and now limit numbers to ensure a family-friendly, safe event. We follow the best practice guidelines of the industry, which includes elements of health and safety, working with the local authority and other partners to keep the event running in a safe manner, as achieved for 54 years. I used the term health and safety as a narrow interpretation of the work going on throughout the year to ensure that we are compliant with the ever-changing and rigorous safety requirements. I hope the new £3 charge will be seen as an excellent way to ensure local people enjoy the event in a safe environment whilst supporting local charities. That was from John Leeson, who is chairman of Winchester Roundtable.
Bus station barely altered in 70 years, says Pearl Gibbons. Sir, read George Hayter and the bus station revamp, noted in the Chronicle October the 10th, in all my 70 years, it has never altered. Apart from a lick of paint and new seating, there are no toilet facilities and a very outdated cafe. What must visitors and tourists alike be thinking? Off-putting, to say the least. Make it a part of the railway station improvements, putting travel facilities all in one place, cutting congestion and pollution in the city. That would leave a much larger space for the long overdue Silver Hill development. As for River Park, don't pussyfoot. Winchester is expanding, so give us something to be proud of. There is scope for wonderful projects. Not in my time, maybe, but hopefully for my grandchildren. Mrs. Pearl Gibbons, Chandler's Road, Abbots Barton.
This letter does not refer to River Park. And it comes from Jane Rutter, who in fact is the chairman of the steering group which organised the recent Worthies Festival. And it's entitled Worthies Festival, Another Triumph. Sir, as chairman of the steering group which organised the recent Worthies Festival, may I thank you for the wide coverage and support you gave the event. A village festival over 9 days tries to involve every organisation group and needs a huge team of people to make it work. You kindly quoted my comments at the end of the festival, but I really would like to thank a few more people who went above and beyond the call of duty. Our sponsors made the whole event possible and meant we could have the inclusive community celebration we always planned. Scottish and Southern Energy paid for the marquee, focal point of the second weekend, and a huge improvement on last time's umbrellas and plastic sheeting. All our councils supported us, whilst Leaders Estate Agents sponsored the park run, and many other businesses advertised in the programme or sponsored events. Bacardi Brown Foreman Brands again enabled us to close with a bang by sponsoring the fantastic fireworks. The final Saturday's music festival was a triumph. All the bands and soloists played for the love of it, and it was all pulled together by Dan Conroy. Other key contributors include Sue Tinkler, Tom Andrew Power, Robin and Christine Cook, Mandy Hallisey, Gloria Francis, Paul Young, Jill Froud, Roger Owens, David and Alison Woolford, and countless others. The success of the Worthies Festival is down to them and to their selflessness and generosity. Thank you all. Jane Rutter, Bedfield Lane, Headbourne Worthy.
This letter is from Roland Emmons and is headed, "School's stance was exactly right." Sir, may I offer an alternative perspective to the Stranger Danger article suggesting Western Primary may have overreacted, Chronicle October the 10th. As my son is a pupil, I am very happy with the proactive stance the school took. They promptly raised the issue, making parents aware, as an individual with a similar description had been seen watching children on a few instances over previous days. Imagine the headlines if the unthinkable had occurred. I thank the school for their vigilant and prompt response. Rona Demon, St Paul's Hill, Winchester.
Sally Eames asks, why can't cyclists take a test too? Sir, why can't the bike riders take a test? The highway code says no riding on pavements. But they do. I got missed by one last Tuesday in Cross Keys Passage. I didn't move. I would have been flattened if I had. Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbots Barton.
That concludes the letters, and we now have items of historical interest, and we have them from 150 and 25 years ago.
And this first one is from 100 years ago, which of course was 1913. No good women, says campaigner. Sometimes we are all tempted to cry, oh, save us from our friends. Surely this must be just now the petition of the Anti-Suffrage League with regard to Sir Almroth Wright and his new book. Sir Almroth Wright is the prop and prophet of the Antis, but in his unexpurgated case, he has most unkindly turned upon his admirers and cut away the ground from under their feet. In this new book, Sir Almroth makes the sweeping assertion that there are no good women, only women who have been under the influence of good men.
This is slightly less controversial. October the 19th, 1963. Chimney fires investigation. A high incident of chimney fires in houses occupied by families of the armed forces is disclosed in a survey by the Chief Fire Officer of Hampshire, Mr. E. R. Ashill. He told the Fire Services Committee in Winchester on Wednesday that the matter was causing concern to the Fire Service and Army authorities, as well as a result of the analysis, the War Department, which had chimneys swept by contract at half-yearly intervals, and was carrying out a careful investigation. The analysis of chimney fires for the year ending June the 30th last showed that nearly 4 in every 100 houses belonging to the forces in Hampshire had chimney fires.
25 years ago, October the 14th, 1988, training at new leisure centre.
What?
Sorry. Staff training has begun at the new River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester, but work is still going on to get the centre in a pristine condition for opening. There's still a large amount of minor building matters which McAlpine have not managed to carry out, despite promises that there would be urgent action, said Mr. Simon Cook, the city's director of amenities, on Wednesday. There was, he said, still a lot of snagging to be done, the process by which the city clerk of works checks finished work and pronounces it satisfactory.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and I think inevitably it will be about something to do with the leisure centre.
Well, you must wait and see. The editorial comment has the title, "The Devil, as Ever, is in the Detail." Leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Keith Wood, says only 10 to 15 metres of a cricket pitch would be lost under plans for a bigger and better leisure centre at River Park. But how is it going to squeeze all the proposed new facilities, including 3 swimming pools and a larger gym, on the site of tennis courts and just a strip of the field, is a mystery. A spokesman has said that this is, quote, an estimate for now, unquote, and would depend on a detailed analysis of the facilities to be provided if the council goes down this route. But the devil is in the detail. As reported this week, organisers of Winchester's ever-popular fireworks display are worried there will be no longer enough space on the field to stage the major fundraising event. Riverside Indoors Bowls Club also has concerns, whilst nearby residents are so worried that they have formed Save the Wreck Group. Confusion surrounds exactly what is being proposed. How much of the field will be lost, where the tennis courts will go and what it will cost. The council needs to explain in detail exactly what its plans are. Options of improving the centre in its current location or building at Bar End could avoid these fireworks whilst keeping the real thing.
And now to something completely different.
Hurrah! Now, we don't have first person this week, but we do have a contribution by the director of Winchester Writers' Conference, Judith Hennigan, commenting on the Young Writers' Poetry Competition. And it's headed, "Encourage them to love words, not fear them." When I was 6, my teacher, a wise and lovely nun, asked me for my 2 favourite words. "Strawberries and sinking mud," I shouted, because these words interested me and sounded nice together. They became a story which went up on the story wall. That day, I saw myself as a writer. Last weekend, as I sat in Winchester's Discovery Centre listening to a 5-year-old read out her poem at the annual Young Poets Tea, I was struck by the ways in which very young children loved to play with words, roll them around on their tongues, stretch them, and come at them from surprising angles. The tea brought together 13 young people aged between 5 and 17 from schools all over Hampshire, who had each won a prize at the Young Writers' Poetry Competition run by the University of Winchester Writers' Conference. In between Viennese whirls, hula hoops and lemonade, the poems were read aloud by the children themselves, or, where shyness prevented them, by the adjudicator, poet Keith Bennett. They were all wonderful in different ways, energetic, witty, evocative, pithy. What they each had in common was an infectious enthusiasm for words. So how can I square this with the much-quoted study published by the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development last week, in which young adults in England scored among the lowest in the industrialised world in literacy and numeracy? For literacy alone, England came 22nd out of 24 countries. Such a report raises serious concerns. It has also provoked accusations about teaching standards, ideology, and, rather confusedly, a culture of low aspirations. Our core skills leave much to be desired, it seems. I don't need convincing that good literacy is vital for employability, for growth, and for taking young people forward in a competitive environment, even with the latest technology. But measurable standards require some conformity, and this may itself act as a barrier to the deep literacy that ensures lifelong reading and writing. Such conformity, which can tempt policymakers towards lists of prescribed reading, as well as repeatedly testing the correct way to ingest and regurgitate language, may deny the pleasure to be had from making poems and comics and stories. I don't know what the best start might be. Japan and Finland presumably have something to teach us. But how can it be bad when children play with their own language? If we encourage them to love words rather than fear them, those all-important literacy skills are more likely to follow. As those young writers demonstrated, words are fun. Words have power. Words can break down barriers. Words have their own energy. Words can sing. I'm looking forward to next year's tea already.
Nursing stations to be scrapped at RHCH in drive for better care. Nursing stations are to be scrapped at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital in a bid to improve patient care. Donna Green, Chief Operating Officer and Nursing Director, said out-of-sight stations would give way to desks in the middle of patient bays. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust could be among the first to go down this route after a patient's SAR told said nurses should be encouraged to spend less time talking and more time caring. Labour MP Anne Clwyd was appointed by David Cameron in the wake of the Mid-Staffordshire scandal. She said one area of concern was nursing stations, where staff review patient records, make phone calls, and have private conversations. Mrs. Clwyd suggested removing the stations completely, and reintroducing desks in the middle of wards could have the effect of forcing more interaction with patients and higher standards of care. Mrs. Green said, "I think sometimes when patients and the public see nurses at the station, they don't think they are doing any work, which is not necessarily true, but they can do it at a desk in a bay, and so there is additional observation of patients. I have wanted to do this refurbishment for some time." She added, "Old-fashioned Nightingale wards had desks at the end of wards which patients could see, and they often felt more reassured." Other improvements include more en-suite facilities. It is proposed every six-bedded bay have its own toilet and shower. The Trust is spending £1 million revamping wards in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals this year, and a similar amount could be earmarked next year. But not everyone is in favour of getting rid of nurses' stations. Peter Carter, head of the Royal College of Nursing, has previously said it was not practical to review case notes, work on a computer, and answer the telephone in the middle of a ward.
Mortarboards fly as graduates celebrate. It was a day they will always remember. Thousands of Winchester University students were celebrating this week as they officially graduated. In fine sunshine on Tuesday, mortarboards flew outside the cathedral where the ceremony took place, with students reflecting on happy memories. Jordan Langdon, a 21-year-old events management graduate, said, "I'm really, really proud, and I have made my parents proud. If I could go back, I would do it all again. I would probably do more work, but I have enjoyed my 3 years here. It's been amazing." Adele Neese, 22, who earned a degree in events management and media production, added, "It's been a great experience and I have met a lot of people. My course was really interesting and it's been good fun getting to this stage." Meanwhile, university staff also joined the celebrations with the annual procession from Abbey House up the High Street, accompanied by drummers. There is only one procession each year, and this year's included some of Winchester's great and good, including Mayor Ernie Jeffs, the very Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester Cathedral, and Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor of the University.
Old soldiers remember on happy return to Winchester. In an amazing coincidence, two old soldiers returned to Winchester on Tuesday, one for the first time in 60 years. One visited his old base, while the other, on his 90th birthday, sipped a cappuccino in the building where he was born. Reg Argyle was born in St. Thomas's Street, and for the last 4 years on his birthday, he has returned. He was enlisted in the Hampshire Regiment as a boy soldier at the age of 15 by his dad. He served for 25 years, travelling the world, but never forgot his childhood in Winchester. Speaking at Ginger Tea for Two, which now occupies his old home, he said, "I'd come to my gran's when she lived in St. Peter Street for holidays. I used to go down to River Park and get a canoe and float down the river all day." He met his sweetheart, Mary, who worked at the Royal Hants County Hospital. They married in 1949 and had three children, Charles, 53, Alan, 52, and Dave, 58. Reginald, who now lives in Alton, served in Korea with the Gloucesters in the early 1950s. They were in one of the biggest battles and lost about 1,000 men, and only 120 came out. I'm the only one still living today. In World War II, he was struck by shrapnel at Monte Cassino in Italy, where he lost his best friend, Leonard Burgess, from Sutton Scotney during a mortar attack. Meanwhile, Ron Hands, 81, was just 18 when he first arrived at Peninsula Barracks in 1950. He returned for the first time in 61 years, stirring memories of his service in the Rifle Brigade. Ron, from near Bournemouth, said, "It brings back an awful lot of memories. It was lovely to have a look round, and I couldn't have picked a better day for it. I couldn't believe being back in the square. I marched miles around it, and now it's a beautiful garden. It would not surprise me if all those soldiers who passed through here and then never returned were still here in spirit." During his service, he served in Germany, even visiting Belsen concentration camp while it was being demolished. He was given a tour of the Royal Green Jackets Museum by former curator and now volunteer Ken Gray. And this article is accompanied by a number of photographs of both gentlemen, Ron Hands in Peninsula Barracks and Reg Argyle outside the house in St. Thomas's Street. Reg Argyle in particular looks very fetching, sporting a very military moustache.
Rather unusually, I'm reading an obituary concerning Sarah Morgan. Sarah Morgan, the founding conductor of Winchester Community Choir, has died after a short illness, aged 65. Sarah was fascinated by singing and harmony from an early age. Discovering folk song in the 1960s, she became involved in the Sussex folk scene, and whilst training as a teacher, discovered that in some circles, the ability to sing and accompany herself on the guitar was not regarded as real music. A formative, though negative, experience that influenced her inclusive outlook on making music. Over 25 years, Sarah moved from working as a development and training professional, with music as a sideline, to working as a musician, who occasionally undertook non-musical training or development work. In the 1980s, she joined Bread and Roses, a four-part vocal harmony group. In 1999, she was asked to take on the leadership of a village choir, and applied there the model of open access with no auditions, learning by ear rather than sight singing, and a repertoire based largely on folk songs. For the past 10 years, Sarah sang as a member of Craig Morgan Robson, known as CMR, a trio that weaves beguiling harmonies around material from the British tradition and beyond. She started several choirs and continued to work with Winchester Community Choir and Spotlight Singers in Andover, as well as piloting a workplace choir for Radeon Housing Association in East Lee. In 2011, Sarah and members of Winchester Community Choir set up a day festival for community choirs in Hampshire, which was attended by members of 13 choirs. She wrote later, "Networking with other choirs and listening to them in action had the effect of bringing the choir members closer together and giving them a great sense of pride in our choir and what we have achieved." Also that year, in collaboration with English Folk Dance and the University of Winchester, she organised Out of This World, a conference for folk singers, community choir leaders and academics to explore the place of English folk song in the world music repertoire. This year, she ran training in arranging songs for community choirs, and with her CMR colleague, Carolyn Robson, developed the Song Leaders course at the University of Winchester. At the time of her death, Sarah was near to completing a PhD at the university.
Cathedral gets new precentor. The Bishop of Winchester has announced a new senior appointment at the cathedral. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin has confirmed that the Reverend Sue Wallace is to be the new canon precentor and sacrist. The Reverend Wallace will take responsibility for the planning and direction of daily cathedral worship, liturgy, music and other services. She said, "I'm absolutely delighted to be coming to Winchester. Cathedrals have an amazing ability to connect people to the sacred, and I have felt a deep calling to the cathedral precentor role for a long time." The Dean, the very Reverend James Atwell, said, "Susan Wallace will bring many qualities to the task of leadership and direction from her experience, both at York Minster and at Leeds Minster. I am sure she will quickly be made to feel at home in the cathedral community." The Reverend Wallace is a talented musician, composer and artist, and has developed a reputation for creating engaging programmes of worship, such as the use of cafe-style Eucharists, discussion and craft sessions, and multimedia evensongs. She succeeds the Reverend Canon Michael St. John Chanel, who retired this year, having served as precentor and sacrist at the cathedral since 2006.
Work to get underway on £1 million jeweller development. Work is set to begin on a £1 million new jewellery shop in Winchester High Street. Jeremy France is moving his business down the street from Walcott Place into the former Black's outdoor clothes unit in the Pentis. It will be the only independent shop in the lower end of the High Street and comes after years of Mr. France searching for a more prominent site. He said, "I'm obviously very excited at the continuing progression of the business. The new premises will offer the largest fine jewellery and luxury lifestyle experience, not just in Winchester, but also Hampshire, which will no doubt become a destination for those seeking beautiful pieces. The three-storey Grade 2 listed building will be refurbished over the coming weeks and should be open by December."
Village linked to flyer who rescued Lawrence of Arabia. A history project in Swanmore has unearthed a link between the village and Lawrence of Arabia. Hugh Duner, whose family home was on Chapel Road, was a pilot for T.E. Lawrence during the Arab Revolt in 1916 to 1918. Lawrence, played in the 1963 film by Peter O'Toole, was the British officer who helped the Arabs rebel against the Ottoman Empire. Disillusioned by broken promises to the Arabs after the war, Lawrence joined the RAF and then the army under assumed names before he was killed in a motorcycle crash near Wool in Dorset in 1935. Historian Keith Harrington has been involved in Swanmore's efforts to commemorate World War I, spearheaded by village archivist Crawford Wright. During this research, Mr. Harrington was shown a picture of Mr. Duner, the same Duner mentioned in Lawrence's book Seven Pillars of Wisdom. On one occasion, Duner flew his aged BE-12 plane to the rescue of Lawrence and his Arab forces while they were pinned down, drawing the enemy's fire and allowing Lawrence and his men to escape. His actions earned him the Distinguished Flying Cross. Mr. Harrington said, "During the period of his military service, from time to time I understand he stayed with his parents and younger brother Cecil at the family home, Flint Cottage, in Chapel Road." Surviving the Great War, Mr. Duner later became a test pilot with the RAF. Mr. Harrington says an elderly lady, whose father had run a pub in Swanmore, recalls the young man as a pilot popping in on occasion. "I believe occasionally he would fly over the village. He would do a few loop-the-loops and head off again," he said. Aged 31 and by that time a flight lieutenant, Duner was killed while testing an aircraft at Hucklecote near Gloucester in 1927.
First GPs, now the public, shaping hospital services. People are being asked for their views on the future shape of hospital services in Winchester and Eastleigh. Bosses at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover hospitals, have been working on plans for a new emergency care unit since 2012. Now GPs have a bigger say in the commissioning of services, local people are being consulted. Speaking after a roadshow at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Dr. Nigel Sylvester, Medical Director of West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, said, "For the first time, GPs have more of a direct role in planning and buying services on behalf of the local population. The commissioning group has an important role as a purchaser of care, whilst the hospital trust's role is to provide it. We all need to work together. The idea is to get a sense of what really matters to people. We have a responsibility to listen to the public." Planning for a new emergency hospital started at the end of 2012, as previously reported in the Chronicle. It would take the sickest 20% of patients, including major trauma victims, heart attacks and strokes. The new unit would have specialist consultants on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. less serious A&E patients would go to a minor injury unit in Andover, the RHCH and Basingstoke hospitals. Other more controversial proposals, also revealed by the Chronicle, include moving consultant-led maternity care and the special care baby unit to the new emergency unit. This would see maternity services at Winchester and Basingstoke downgraded to midwife-led centres. Andover already has a centre. More complicated cases, including caesarean sections and pregnant women who feel safer in a hospital setting, would go to the new unit with obstetricians and high-tech care. However, the maternity ward could be separate from the emergency hospital, although linked, and include a midwife-led centre for active births. Potential stumbling blocks include longer distances for visitors to travel. Now, HHFT, North Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group and West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group have launched a public consultation. People are being asked to say what is most important for them in five different scenarios: non-urgent, urgent care, emergency care, visiting and maternity. Health chiefs say the feedback will help them plan better services. A second public consultation will be held once the final proposals have been drawn up.
Phil's not yet had his fill of city's watering holes. It's the definitive guide to Winchester pubs. Around 30 people gathered at Waterstones in Winchester High Street for the launch of the third edition of Time, Gentlemen Please, a look at pubs in and around the city. Author Phil Yates said he had decided to write it after the second edition, written in 2007, sold out, giving him a chance to see how pubs had changed. "It's a good thing we did this because there have been so many alterations. Some pubs have gone, some have changed their names, and one is now a furniture shop," said Phil. The book was published by the City of Winchester Trust, and Mr. Yates had lots of support from friends and family, including wife Joan, the Winchester Heritage Centre, and retired brewery architect David Williams. It cost £9.95 and is printed by Sarson Press of Hyde Street. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Phil in Waterstones with Mayoress Barbara Jeffs, Mayor Ernie Jeffs, and Trust Treasurer Peter Radcliffe.
Winners and losers in broadband lottery. Council chiefs have identified the towns and villages across Hampshire set to get superfast broadband by the end of 2015. Hampshire Superfast Broadband, which aims to roll out fast connection speeds to rural areas, has released a map showing slow spots forecast to get faster connections by the end of 2015. The £13.8 million joint project is funded by local authorities, the government and BT. Places benefiting from upgrades include Alsford, Kingsworthy, Barton Stacey, part of Sutton Scotney, Upper Bullington, Kings Somborne, East Titherley, Wickham, and swathes of the New Forest. But much of Colden Common, Cheriton, Owsleberry, Stoke Charity, East Stratton, Mitcheldever, Sparshold, Crawley, Durley, Morstead and Ampfield will stay in the slow lane until 2017.
MP backs inquiry into nuisance calls. Winchester's MP has backed a parliamentary inquiry into nuisance calls. Steve Brine is part of an all-party group looking at the scale and impact of the problem and the effectiveness of current regulations. Mr. Brine recently met constituents who suffer nuisance calls and said the issue could seriously affect people's lives, particularly the elderly. He said, "Nuisance calls are an irritant to many, but for some people, usually elderly or vulnerable groups, as we heard in evidence from the Citizens Advice Bureau, They can wreck lives because they are often part of sophisticated scams which leave people crippled with debts they can't pay back. Paul Coville of Fordington Road, Full Flood, raised the issue with Mr. Brine at a meeting on October the 11th. He said, "I know residents are backing Steve 100% with his efforts, as problems surrounding incessant nuisance calls can be very serious. Often people are awaiting a serious call or some personal news, and any action that can be taken to reduce and wipe out the problem will be extremely welcome." Research commissioned by the CAB found that 72% of people received a cold call, text or email in the last year, and more than 6 in 10 British adults have received unwanted contact over Payment Protection Insurance, PPI.
Resident slam plans to put 83 houses on beauty spot. "You are treating us like idiots and telling us utter rubbish." The message was unequivocal: don't build houses here. That was the view of a packed public meeting at Kingsworthy, near Winchester, last Thursday. Angry residents told developer Drew Smith Group that it should not go ahead with proposals to build 83 homes on Topfield off Hookpit Farm Lane. Representatives of the company and its agents, Quayside Architects, organised the meeting at Tubbs Hall to get feedback from locals. The company is already building 25 homes on site and has not yet put in a planning application for the new scheme, which will be in two phases. But the 60-plus residents said the area was a well-used village beauty spot and did not have the infrastructure to support major development.
Carroll Centre hits 20. Winchester residents helped celebrate the 20th anniversary of a community centre. Some 80 people attended the AGM at the Carroll Centre Stanmore last Wednesday. Guest speaker was Dorothy Flynn, MBE, a long-standing volunteer who was one of the founding members and fundraising campaigners for the centre. She said, "It's proved itself. The area needs somewhere like this. Stanmore is proud to have it, and it has been a real model for other centres." Chairman Colin Smith clarified rumours over the mooted move to the new Queen's Head pub site in Stanmore Lane. "We decided it would not be in the best interest, as it would be such a huge use of resources and cause the demolition of a building that is only 20 years old. The centre will not be moving." Mrs. Flynn praised past and present managers. "The centre needs your time and support," she said, "just as it did 20 years ago. With your help, even more can be achieved." Mrs. Flynn's speech was given huge applause, and a newly painted mural was presented to her.
High street firms celebrating a summer of success. Winchester businesses are looking forward to the festive season after a very successful summer. Visitors flocked to the city with footfall in June, July and August up by 5.5% on the same period in 2012. Winchester Business Improvement District puts the rise down to a combination of good weather, more attractions and more overseas visitors thanks to the strength of the euro. Catherine Turness, BID manager, said, "It has been a very successful summer for the city. Winchester is consistently bucking trends with visitor numbers and profit margins rising. In the second half, although growth was subdued during the very cold months of March and April, trading during the summer was strong and built upon the success of the growth seen during the Jubilee and Olympic periods last year. One-off events like the Winchester Criterium and Cycle Fair helped, with the cycling race bringing 2,000 to 3,000 people to the city, leading to a 101% increase in footfall in the Lower High Street compared to the same Sunday the year before. Winchester Hat Fair attendance figures were also higher than previous years, thanks to the fine weather. Meanwhile, the High Street vacancy rate is still low, with only 6.2% of units unoccupied.
Rotary backs polio awareness campaign. Winchester Rotary has teamed up with a national charity to launch a polio awareness campaign. The club is working with the British Polio Fellowship to stage the first annual Post-Polio Syndrome Day in the city on Saturday, October the 26th. The debilitating condition affects some 120,000 people in the UK, and members will be handing out purple crocuses, the emblem of the vaccination campaign, in exchange for donations. It's part of a wider End Polio Now campaign run by Rotary International to eradicate the disease globally. Jill Russell, Winchester Rotary's president-elect and a polio survivor, said, "I've contracted polio in 1954 at the age of two, just around the time that the vaccination programme took off. I was fortunate in some ways that it only affected one side of my body, but I lost the use of my left arm and underwent corrective surgery on my left leg several times during my childhood. As recently as 2009, I had further surgery to save my collapsing left ankle, an indication of the effects of the damage the disease causes even in later life. It is vital that we not only eliminate polio, but also ensure that those who have contracted it continue to be helped." Nick Bell, Winchester Rotary President, added, "We have raised considerable amounts for End Polio Now and are grateful to the city's visitors and residents who have shown an interest in polio eradication."
Ex-chairman fires a salvo at council. Alresford Town Council has come under fire from a former chairman over the alleged loss of tens of thousands of pounds from fruit machines in the town recreation centre. Robin Atkins called for an independent investigation into the loss of an estimated £35,000 from the machines at the council-run Alresford Recreation Centre. Mr Atkins told the council last Thursday, "Some £35,000 is owed to the council as a result of machine fraud from March 2011, when the council, under Roy Gentry, approved a 50-50 deal with Enterprise Leisure." He said, "From their introduction in about May 2011, the council failed to introduce any procedures and controls, with no money being received for around 22 months until February 2013. Both council and or Enterprise Leisure are involved with the fraud. It has been covered up by the chair and the executive committee," alleged Mr. Atkins, who called for efforts to be made to chase the £35,000. "An auditor is examining the issue." Councillor Gentry replied, "As chairman of the finance committee, I await the report of the auditor."
Students honour Great War's fallen heroes. Winchester students have launched a project to remember heroes of the Great War. To mark the centenary next year, Winchester University is researching the 459 local men who were killed. Organisers plan to produce a book, including archive articles from the Hampshire Chronicle. So far, 20 students at Peter Simmons have volunteered to help, and former English teacher Sandra Showell, now a Winchester Cathedral guide, will coordinate the project in conjunction with Winchester Records Office. Meanwhile, Hampshire County Council has launched Hampshire Commemorates, a grant scheme to support community plans to mark both World War I and the 70th D-Day anniversaries next year.
The long-distance runners from care. System isolates children from friends and family, says report. Nearly half of children who go missing after being taken into care by Hampshire County Council were placed miles from their local area, it has emerged. Being looked after in foster and care homes far from friends and family is often a factor in children running away, according to a parliamentary inquiry into the scandal of children missing in care in England. It's said until cases of child sexual exploitation in Rochdale put a spotlight on the issue, it had gone largely unnoticed. Reports said children taken into care had already experienced abuse or neglect. As a result, they were extremely vulnerable and easy prey for predatory adults, exploiting gaps in the systems put in place to keep them safe. Charities say long-distance placements are more difficult for local authorities to monitor and can traumatise children who are already damaged and vulnerable. They may have to change schools, for example. Figures show 69 children looked after by Hampshire County Council went missing for more than 24 hours in 2012, a steep increase on 33 in 2011 and 43 in 2010. Of the 145 who ran away over the past 3 years, half, 62, were in care or foster homes outside the County Council boundary, with 24 being more than 20 miles away. Councils have a legal duty to keep accurate records of children who go missing in care. These figures should be reported to local safeguarding children's boards. County bosses said reasons for children going missing range from a fairly typical difficult teenager scenario of not returning home from a party to the pull of peer influence and being unhappy with their care placement. A shortage of foster carers is one of the reasons children can be placed miles from their homes.
Planners object to alien wind farm. Winchester planners have objected to the alien features of a wind farm in the countryside at Woodmancote Down, just a few miles from Bullington Cross. Officers say the six 130-metre masts would have an adverse impact on the unspoiled landscape of the Hampshire Downs, both individually and cumulatively. A report to be considered by the Planning Committee on Thursday said Woodmancote Down and Bullington Cross wind farm proposals would be visible as alien features breaking the skyline of the horizon in the long panoramic views across the Itchen Valley and beyond from the South Downs National Park. It says the excessive height and skyline dominance would affect views from many cherished vantage points on South Downs Way and Wayfarers Walk. But Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council will make the final decision on the proposed Woodmancote wind farm, as Winchester City Council was just consulted.
Concern over music festival campers. Residents have raised concerns about overnight camping at the Alsford Music Festival in the summer. Around 100 people camped out after the record-breaking festival at Albury Park, which raised £10,000 for charity. The Town Council meeting approved the 2014 for June the 20... I'm sorry, that doesn't make much sense. I'll have to make something up. The Town Council meeting approved the date for the 2014 music festival for June the 7th, but heard there were some unhappy residents, with 4 noise complaints and 2 about camping. At the Town Council last Thursday, Gary Smith of Arle Close called for a review of camping and questioned whether allowing it would set a precedent for camping at other events. Festival promoter Ken Veitch said complaints about noise would be addressed with the main stage closing next year at 10:30 p.m. It was unclear where the camping would go in 2014, as the rugby pitches were unlikely to be ready next summer. Council agreed the issue would be resolved at a future meeting.
Now a couple of items about fundraising associated with St. Swithin School. The first one is headed, Students Strut Their Stuff. Winchester students have been strutting the catwalk to raise money for charity. Form 6 students from St. Swithin's School organised the event to raise money for their sister school in Uganda as part of a school-wide campaign. Organisers Zoe Wild, Natalie Aldridge and Flora Gossage raised over £1,300 for St. Catherine's in northern Uganda. And the second item is headed Why Caro's Jumping for Joy. A French teacher from a school in Winchester has raised over £1,000 for charity by skydiving. Caro Buse from St. Swithin's School in Allswood Road jumped from 15,000 feet in a tandem parachute jump to raise money for St. Catherine's School in Lira, northern Uganda. Miss Buse said, "This is something I have always wanted to do, but hadn't had a reason until now. Travelling at 120 miles per hour through clouds is an unforgettable experience, which I enjoyed every minute of."
Hotel Honour. A Winchester hotel has received a special award for its efforts to be more environmentally friendly. Norton Park, near Sutton Scotney, is one of 21 Q hotels across the country to be awarded gold by Green Tourism Business Scheme Awards as part of the National Sustainable Tourism Certification Programme. General Manager Tom Fromm said, "We are committed to having sustainable operations and we strive to reduce the environmental impact of our business activities." John Proctor, Technical Director of Green Tourism, said, "Q Hotels has shown a strong commitment to operating sustainably, demonstrated by the fact that all 21 of their hotels have received a Green Tourism Business Scheme Award."
Council won't relax fracking rules. Hampshire civic chiefs are backing local landowners in an ongoing debate on fracking. The government has been reviewing the planning process for oil and gas-related extraction and is considering amending the rules so applicants do not have to notify landowners of proposals for underground work. A Whitehall report says it is unreasonable and impractical to do so because exact drilling routes are unpredictable and could lead to a very wide area involving several landowners. But the County Council wants the status quo to remain because of environmental questions. The official response said, "Hampshire County Council considers it important all landowners are informed about and provided with the opportunity to engage in all relevant aspects of proposed oil and gas developments which affect their land. It is recognised that in terms of unconventional oil and gas extraction, this is likely to entail contacting a large number of landowners. However, due to the significant public interest and the potential for unforeseen environmental consequences, we believe that this is justified. Applicants would still be expected to notify landowners of any overground work and publish notice of any drilling in a newspaper and a site display through parishes or local authority."
Potholes cost county thousands. Councils in Hampshire have paid out tens of thousands of pounds in the past year as a result of pothole compensation claims. New research shows Hampshire County Council paid more than £70,000 for 845 compensation claims in 2012-13, making it the eighth worst area for potholes in the UK.
Parking restrictions. Winchester traffic bosses are tightening parking restrictions in an inner suburb to make life easier for residents. Residents-only parking in Hyde Abbey Road will be restricted to permit holders between 8 a.m. and now 10 p.m. Monday to Saturday. That will stop the road, close to the city centre pubs and restaurants, being used by people in the evenings. Restrictions in nearby Gordon Road King Alfred Place and King Alfred Terrace, which were incorrectly marked as 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. due to an error in the existing order, will also be until 10 p.m. A poor response to a public consultation in the northern part of Hyde has meant proposed changes there have been dropped. Meanwhile, double yellow lines will be painted in Cannon Street.
Earlier I read a piece about the fact that Winchester students had launched a project to remember heroes of the Great War, and this is another piece which is on the same topic. Grant scheme launched to mark war. A grant scheme to help support communities in their plans to mark 100 years since the start of the First World War and the 70th anniversary of D-Day has been launched. Funding of between £200 and £2,000 to help match fund community-led projects and events will be made available through the New Hampshire Commemorates scheme, which forms part of the raft of events and initiatives planned by Hampshire County Council to mark the anniversaries. A new website will host details of the County Council's programme of commemorations, including the new grant scheme. There will also be a section offering advice to local schools and communities who would like to get involved in the commemorations. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Culture, Recreation and Countryside, Councillor Keith Chapman, said, "This programme of commemorations will mark what are likely to be the last major anniversaries of their kind. Hampshire and its communities played a unique and internationally significant role during the First World War and D-Day, and we have set aside £100,000 to support this programme, including £50,000 of grant funding, which will also complement the national programme backed by government."
Alresford councillors will meet developers. Alresford town chiefs will be meeting developers to discuss house building in the town. The town council has been drawing up proposals for where 500 new houses could go in the town over the next 20 years. Initial suggestions last year, including developing farmland off Sun Lane, were unpopular, and the council responded by holding a series of workshops on issues such as housing, infrastructure and the needs of the elderly with local people. Now Winchester City Council is drawing up the plan and is contacting local landowners whose sites may be suitable for development. The Town Council last Thursday heard that another public meeting may be held in December. A report said the council was asking developers to make presentations following a forthcoming town council planning committee. It would be open to councillors, but not to the general public. The purpose of these meetings is to allow the developer to gain initial feedback from the councillors, to allow councillors to check that developers thoroughly understand the needs of Alresford.
A five-year high for City Council complaints. Winchester City Council has received its highest amount of complaints in more than 5 years. A scrutiny meeting heard general complaints have increased by 15% from 530 last year to 628. It is the largest number of complaints in a year since 2006 and 2007, when 785 were recorded, although it is only five more than received in 2010-11. But complaints to the Independent Ombudsman have fallen from an average of 21 per year between 2001 and 2009 to 11 between 2010 and 2013. The largest increase has been in environmental problems, and officers put this down to teething problems from the change in waste collection from Serco to Biffa in late 2011. Of the 628 complaints, 203 were upheld with an apology or explanation where appropriate. Paul Wood, head of business management, said, "Complaints are very, very useful for an organisation. It gives us an indication into how well we are performing and where we can make improvements. Mr. Wood added the majority of planning complaints came from people who had applications turned down, while access and infrastructure complaints were made up of complaints over parking fines. Councillor Patricia Stallard added, "I think it's worth stating that there was only one complaint with our financial services. Performance and scrutiny and strategic planning are also low. So we must be doing something right."
Date set for roadworks at Winnall Interchange. Work is finally set to start on improving the congestion-causing Winnall Interchange. The Highways Agency has announced that work starts on October the 28th, some 2 months later than originally planned. It is due to last 6 weeks and should result in better traffic flow at the interchange between Eastern Lane, the A34, M3 and Spitfire Link. Businesses in Winnall are getting increasingly frustrated by the delays. In recent years, the junction has become the worst bottleneck in the city since the Hockley traffic lights back in the 1980s and early 1990s. The scheme involves widening Eastern Lane into three lanes and putting in traffic signals, widening the carriageway on the eastern side of Winnall roundabout to three lanes, and realigning the lanes on the southern bridge to accommodate three lanes.
Airline scratch card a winner for hospice. A Hampshire hospice has received a cash boost from a major European airline. Ryanair has donated €10,000, or £8,482, to Naomi House and Jack's Place, which cares for children and young people with life-limiting conditions. Mark Smith, Deputy Chief Executive of the Sutton Scotney-based hospice, was recently flown out to Dublin to collect the donation. He said, "This enables us to continue providing valuable care and support to children and young people." With less than 20% of the £7 million we seek to raise annually coming from government, we are reliant on donations such as this to continue our work. Caroline Green, Ryanair Director of Customer Service, added, "Ryanair is delighted to support Naomi House and Jack's Place, which does so much to help children and young people with life-limiting and life-threatening conditions. The funding comes from the airline's Fly to Wind scheme, where passengers buy scratch cards during the flight with proceeds donated to charity."
With that very nice story, that concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and our thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.